Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Brian.
I'm Rui.
And we're experiencing technical difficulties as expected from our demo environment. Nothing ever works when you demo things live.
Is it the flock of birds? Remember last year we had the flock of birds that came through and our connection dropped?
It's true. There's always something weird going on. So rather than have our demo that we were just about to have on enterprise voice configuration, we're going to continue on and then loop back after our break. So with that, well, here's Rui.
All right. Well, let's talk about designing Exchange Server 2013 Unified Messaging Integration with Link Server. So unified messaging is basically voicemail capabilities with auto attendant and subscriber access in addition to it. So we'll do an overview, and then we'll look into integrating it, Exchange UM with Link Server 2013. So let's first look at the architecture and the UM listening ports. So let's do some diagrams, shall we? So Exchange Server 2013. So we need the roles have really drastically changed for 2013. Now there's just the CAS and the mailbox server. The CAS is the client access server, and the mailbox server here is represented by the acronym MBX. Sounds like a motocross or a dirt bike ride type of event, doesn't it? And in terms of Link Server, FE is your front-end server. It's the gateway to the Exchange server. So from Exchange perspective, your Link server is going to appear as a gateway. That's what it represents. And so we'll look at inbound routing and the Exchange UM routing specifically. So here what we can see is you can see the Link client that's going to connect to your Link server. And the Link server is going to, if he can't reach the user that he's trying, the callee that he's trying to reach, the Link server is going to direct the call to Exchange so that the user can leave a voice message. So the Link server is going to connect to your CAS server where the UM call routing is there, and he's going to redirect the Link server to the actual mailbox. And at that point, the user can leave a voice message because that's where the media traffic is going to happen. So all this traffic in red here is just SIP signaling traffic, so where to go and leave a voice message for that user. And that mailbox is going to be the mailbox of the callee so they can retrieve it. Okay. So UM listening ports. So you have to specify certain pieces of information for this to all work. So the first thing is you're going to have the SIP, the client access server connectivity here. And if you're using an insecure port, then it's going to be 5060. Not recommended. But if you're going to use a secured port, that's going to be 5061. That's certainly the better choice there. There are no UDP ports, so as you know, or maybe not know, Link does not use SIP over UDP. It's all over TCP connections. So there's no option there to use UDP for connectivity with Exchange. And then can the ports be changed? Yes, you can certainly change them, and there is a PowerShell commandlet to do that. And you can do to make the modifications, and that is set-umcallroutesettings, and you can specify those things. Now, in terms of the mailbox itself also has a SIP listening port. So both the CAS and the mailbox are SIP endpoint SIP servers as well, and so that is where the unified messaging service is going to be located, and that's where your voice message is going to be dropped. And it's going to be listening on port 5062 if it's insecure, and port 5063 if it's a secure connection. And the service listens on both of those ports. Again, not applicable for UDP, so there is no UDP, there's no SIP over UDP traffic, and these ports cannot be changed. So the SIP mailbox, where the UM worker processes, will be listening on port 5065 and port 5067 for TCP. That is insecure connection. And then if for our secured connection where it uses mutual TLS, so that is TLS on both directions, it's going to be listening on port 5066 and port 5068. This is the case when the UM startup mode is set to dual. So there are three different modes that you can specify. One is dual, the other one is TCP, the other one is or unsecured, and the other one is TLS. Yeah. So you can
remember
specify.
Back in the Exchange 2007 days, it was dual always. That's what it was.
Right.
2010 introduced the option to do dual or TCP. And now we have actually three options, TLS, TCP, or dual. So.
Right. And again, UDP is not supported, ports cannot be changed. And then in terms of the RTP traffic for the mailbox, there's no port specified here. It is a port range. And here
and
we're
media.
This is media. We're talking about media. We're not talking about signaling. And so the media always goes through, well, not always, but it will try to optimize through UDP. And the port range is 1024 up to 65,535.
Right. From an exchange perspective, that is always UDP. Obviously, link, we want UDP, then we can go TCP if we have to, but we don't want to. But this is internal to your network, so the theory is you have control over your network. You should be able to communicate to the exchange server over UDP. So.
Exactly. And the range of ports can be modified, so if you need to restrict it, you certainly can do that. So in terms of integrating UM with Link Server 2013, here's some of the steps, high-level steps. There is a link here that I provide at the bottom to an article that actually goes into much more details in it. Certainly try to provide as much information you can. We're just trying to provide an overview so that you can go and research some of this on your own. So the first thing to do is you need to go and create an Exchange SIP URI dial plan. So Exchange also has a concept of dial plans, similar but not exactly the same as your Link Server dial plans. So there are two distinct concepts, but so one is for Exchange and the other one is for Link. So you have to create a SIP URI specific dial plan. Then you're going to configure.
And that's important because Exchange UM supports more than just Link, right?
Correct.
So there's TELURI ones, there's E164 format, there's SIP specific, and that's all because Exchange wasn't created. Exchange UM was not created for Link. Link came after the fact, and it's tying in to the supportability matrix of Exchange Server.
Exactly. You could specify. You could actually connect Exchange UM to a separate gateway.
We do that all the time. Other third-party PBXs that are ditching their own internal voicemail solution for the Exchange one because it's superior. So.
All right. So it provides provides customers a lot more flexibility.
Yeah.
So then next thing is to configure your Exchange UM startup mode, and we'll talk more about what that means. The next step is configuring certificates. We'll go into those details as well. And then you have to run this PowerShell script here, Exchange UC util. We'll explain what that covers. It's a funny thing. So when I first worked on this Exchange UM integration with Exchange team, we had to come up with these tools. There's the PS. This is the PowerShell script, and there's an equivalent one for Link. And it looks like it's still the same tools after all these years. So it's pretty funny to see that. And the next step is to configure Link Server 2013 to work with UM, Exchange UM. And then we'll do the voicemail routing. And then we exchange the call authorizations and routing to make sure that they have it. And then, of course, these are features that Exchange provides, the subscriber access number, and then the secondary dial plan supports.
Right. So Unlike Link, Exchange can have multiple DIDs or numbers associated with an Exchange mailbox. So maybe 3,000 is your particular one, but if you call 3,001, 2, 3, 4, or 5, all of those are associated to your UM mailbox too. Exchange can route multiple numbers to a single mailbox. Again, remember Link is one number, one person, other than your private number, but that doesn't count. So.
Right.
Okay.
All right. So let's create a dial plan. So the first step is to create a Exchange UM dial plan. And the type here we're going to specify is going to be SIP URI. And the security mode is going to be secure. So
right, there's also one called SIP Secured. That secures everything, the media, the transport, and the signaling. SIP Secured only encrypts the signaling. And so it doesn't work. We need everything to be encrypted. Exchange and Link communications 100% encrypted.
Exactly. All right. And then the next step is to add all the CAS and mailbox servers to your dial plan. So that's required so that Link can trust the Exchange UM servers to send calls. So here, what that means is that Link, if there is no trust relationship with Exchange, it's not going to connect. It's just going to refuse the connection. So you have to specify this trust relationship. And that's where also certificates come into play.
Right. And pre-CU1, this had to be done through the PowerShell. It fixed in the GUI. It was partially available if you had a separate front and back end server, but once we put them all together, which is the majority of our labs and how things are run, it never works. So we had to use PowerShell. But that's not the case post CU1 Plus, so FYI.
Yep. All right, so that just means that by doing this, the CAS and the mailbox servers are trusted by Link. Here's this PowerShell scripts for doing those. So setting up the DAL plans. So the next step is setting up the startup mode to TLS or Joule. So this means that it'll be integrated with the TCP gateways. Right. And again, we show the PowerShell scripts for how to do that. And then the next step is to open the Exchange mail management shell and run the following script. All right, so and we see the screenshot here of what those settings are for the startup mode. So what does this script do? So this script here, this PowerShell script, will set up the ACLs in Active Directory so that there is that trust relationship between.
Right.
Between Exchange UI.
Link has to be able to read the Exchange attributes that it needs to read and only the ones it needs to read. And so that's what that script sets up. It also adds the gateway by reading in what does Link have. It puts that back into the Exchange console so that it creates your Link gateways for you.
Right, exactly. Okay, so certificate recommendations. So you're going to have to import a certificate that's valid and signed by public or private CA. It's just simpler if, since all the servers are internal, to just use a private CA. Windows Server provides a certificate authority that you can use. And the Exchange servers, as well as the Link servers, need to get certificates from the same certificate authority, because that way it can trust those servers. So when deploying TLS with UEM, you must use a local computer's FQDN in the certificate's subject name, so that's the SN, and then applies the certificates used for client access and mailbox servers. So you issue those certificates to Exchange.
Right. Now remember, the way that these certificates are used, they're used for the role of UEM. So you're more than likely, if not 100% likely, going to have another certificate that's used for your IIS, so that's going to hit your Outlook web app. Your other communications that are going to be encrypted and secured, whether it's SMTP, POP, IMAP, things of that nature, that's typically an external certificate. I would say 95% of the communications when we do these internal integrations, we create a one-off certificate for Exchange UEM that's associated only to the UEM service. And it's an internal that's trusted on both sides because everything trusts the internal certificates. But it's really important to know that we need that name in the inside of that certificate, and typically we don't want that name on the outside, so we use a separate, ideally free certificate if we have an internal CA.
Right. And then the last part is we don't want to use a wildcard subject name for Link Server and Exchange.
That's right. Exchange supports wildcard, Link does not. So
right.
So while everything may look like it works, it won't. You need to have TLS is the requirement that requires us not to have a wildcard.
So. Exactly. All right, so then the next step is to run the PowerShell script, and that grants the Link Server permissions to read the Exchange UEM Active Directory components, so specifically the SIP URI DAL plans. So Link needs to be able to read the DAL plans in Active Directory, and so that sets the ACLs. And then it creates the corresponding UEM IP gateways for Exchange so that it knows to contact the Link mm-hmm. servers. And then the last part is it creates the Exchange UEM hunt groups for each of the UEM IP gateways.
Yep, all automatically by that script.
Exactly. So there's these UEM IP hunt groups that are configured for each one of the gateways.
It's also, if you're doing this in a lab and you run through this process, you'll notice that in the screenshot it shows a particular event. That event ID is saying that it's discovered the Link side and the Exchange side and things are all tied together. If you're trying to rush this, it's not going to work, and the writes aren't going to be there. Cycling the UEM service on Exchange, cycling the front-end service that on the Link servers will get everything to mesh together, because they need to re-query Active Directory, and it's not an immediate process. So either cycle the services or wait. Either way will work. So
right, you can just wait for the synchronization
right.
to occur with Active Directory. Good. So now we just configured the Link servers 2013 to work with UEM. So users may now be enabled for messaging, so for voice messaging, and calling from Link when it's possible. So next step is to call the tool OCSUMUtil, and that is used to create special contact objects that allow the PSTN dialing to subscriber access on auto attendance. So what this means here is that now this tool is going to create special contact objects, and they're special because they go into a specific OU, and they're going to be associated with the auto attendant and subscriber access.
Right. So in order for us to be able to get, you know, so when we think about the voice routing that we did earlier that we spoke of, when we're going through that list, if it's not an emergency number, it's not something that is internal, well, then we're going to be trying to send that number on the outside, when in fact it needs to go to Exchange. By creating a contact object, we now own that number, and Link says, oh, that's an internal number, and in order to reach that, we send it to this UM service URI, and that's over at this particular server. And so all of that happens when we create these contact objects. So without the contact objects, you'll never get things to flow, because there's nowhere for them to flow to. There's no number for them to associate with.
Right, and that's the whole point about the contact object, is to associate a phone number with the contact object. Now, you might be asking, why a contact object as opposed to a user object? Well, the main difference is because a user object is a anti-principal account, which means that a user could log on as that user object. But with a contact object, you can't actually log on to Active Directory with that contact object or contact account. And so that provides more security protection.
Because we're all about security.
All about security. So we talked about certificates and setting up the trust so that they, the Exchange and Link can connect to each other. And now let's talk about voicemail routing. So you have three components. You got the inbound routing. We talked a little bit about that. We covered that when we did the voice routing. And a new component here is the Exchange UM routing. So that's a different part. So inbound routing, it adds an opaque. What it does is it adds an opaque equal app colon EXUM, which represents Exchange UM. And so that way we know that the request is for an Exchange UM service. Or we add a app colon voicemail for the user's voicemail server. So one of those two options. And that way we know that the call needs to be routed to Exchange UM routing.
Right, and that goes immediately to the voicemail box when there's the app colon voicemail. The app Exchange UM is just, again, to specify that it's an Exchange app, it's not a person, it's not a mailbox, because there's not really, when you create a subscriber access number or an auto attendant, there's not a mailbox object associated there. So it needs to know that it's an application that Exchange is managing and sending it to that, as opposed to an actual endpoint or voicemail.
Right. And so once those tags are added, then it knows to route the actual call to the Exchange UM routing component. And the Exchange UM routing component will add a diversion header when a call has been diverted to Exchange UM. Because originally the user is calling, so for example, the user, like myself, I'd be calling you, Brian, but I wasn't expecting to get your voice message. So the Link server has to redirect that call over to the voice message. And that's what it's doing here.
Right. And part of that diversion is we need to be able to know who originally made the call. Let's say I received a call on your behalf, and then I forwarded it to somebody's voicemail. It's not from me, it's from the original caller. We maintain all that information. We also need to know that if you're calling your voicemail, you don't need to call yourself. You want to go directly into your voicemail. All of that pre-authorization and information happens by the Exchange UM routing. So.
Exactly. So in summary, the inbound routing decides whether the call should go to Exchange for voice message or the auto attendant. And then the Exchange UM routing gets the call over to the Exchange server.
Correct.
So those are the three basics that you want to remember. So Exchange call authorization and routing. So we use here Link server voice policies instead of Exchange dial codes and rules and authorization. So the voice message would be, the voice policies would be applied to the call.
All right, this goes back to if we're only Exchange and Link, there's no reason, in my opinion, to put your call restrictions in the Exchange side, let it happen with based off of the user's dial plans or associating specific contact objects, like in this case, the main auto attendant at the bottom, we're associating to the voice policy, Seattle. So anybody that's calling out of the Seattle will manage his ability to make calls based off of the communication within Link. Otherwise, you're managing two areas. You're managing the rights and roles and access within Exchange, and you're managing rights and roles and access within Link. The two together can get pretty complicated when you're troubleshooting. So just making everything open in Exchange, your call patterns to be kind of star, just whatever you get, let it go, and then we'll determine on the Link side what can and can't be called.
Exactly. It's just easy to centralize all your routing policies on one side versus, you know, trying to do it on on two different systems.
And this is stressing, this is from a link exchange perspective. It could be completely different if you're doing Exchange and a third-party PBX or some other solution that you're integrating with, because they may or may not have that ability to do those controls. It is how it's configured. So just keep that in mind as you're configuring Exchange to make your life easier.
Exactly. All right, so then the next thing is the link outbound routing will apply to link server voice policies to use based on the function of the generating call. So what that means is that the authenticated caller will use the enterprise voice policy, and they'll be able to call into the mailbox and play on phone and use their subscriber access access to it.
Right, all based off their voice policy that they have in link, because it's an authenticated user, we know who they are, their voice policy applies within link itself.
Okay, yep. So that covers
that. But there's anonymous, so what do we do with anonymous? And that's the last point on the slide.
Yeah,
that's so where we set the PowerShell command.
Right, so for unauthenticated users or callers, in this case anonymous, they'll use the enterprise voice policy of the link server UM contact object. And that's where the PowerShell command comes into play here. So right. We can specify the policy for those types of callers.
Because we can grant policies to users, we can grant them to contacts. Remember, we've created a contact for the Exchange auto attendant. So now, let's give it rights. And that could be all kinds of rights that you're applying to it to lock it down, to make sure that it can only make calls to who it can go to and what voice policy patterns we're going to be using.
Exactly. All right, subscriber access numbers. So those are PSTN numbers for subscriber access that directs to a specific dial plan. So if an organization desires to have a single subscriber access number to publish, then all users must be on the same dial plan, okay? And then the extensions within the dial plan must be unique.
Yeah, and it won't even let you provision someone for unified messaging if that extension is already in play. So Exchange is keeping its own extension list. That extension list is completely separate, but in your best interest to be identical to the link. So if my extension is 8080, as it was in the Redmond main number, in Exchange, I would expect that to be 8080 as well. And there's two reasons for that. One, when I'm dialing into my subscriber access to get my voicemail, ask me for my extension. If I have to remember a different extension, it's that much more confusing. And two, if a user calls into your auto attendant and wants to dial someone by extension, they need to know what your extension. If it's not the same as what your real extension is, again, complexity. So extension
you
should
keep it
match one to one.
Right. You want to keep it consistent as much as possible. So if you can, just match them together. That would be the easiest thing to do. All right. So secondary dial plan support. So this allows users sometimes to have two or more extensions, UM extensions, in different UM dial plans. So you can have two voicemails. So for example, Link Phone with a CPRI dial plan and a station set dial plan, they can have two ones. So UM will take voice messages on all extensions. So you can have multiple extensions that would be used for routing for voice messages. Yep. And that allows you, you can log into Outlook voice access from all extensions. So you can have multiple extensions. Not something that's, unless you have a special business need for that, probably not something you'd want to necessarily give to all the users, only for special cases, because now they have to remember two different mm-hmm. extensions. But it is possible to have multiple extensions. So you have the flexibility there to do that.
And in that example, the most common time I see that is when we're doing a pilot and we're putting link enterprise voice in. We already have unified messaging in for another solution. Let's Cisco, some Avaya, something else. And so they have already got voicemail, but I want them to have voicemail in link as well. I can do that just by adding a second dial plan. And they already have a different extension because one's to call their Cisco desk phone and one's to call their link phone. So again, from a pilot perspective, we also see it when you need to have people receive calls from different languages. So let's say you have a dial plan that's primary language is English and a second one that's primary language is German. Well, maybe one extension, if they call and get your voicemail, they're going to get the extension prompts in German. If they call the other extension, and it's going to be the English prompts, all based off dial plans or what operators are tied to that dial plan. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons you could do it. You just want to be careful and not willy-nilly just adding extensions for the sake of adding extensions to users.
Exactly. So that covers it, but we're not quite done yet. I would like to show you something. I know some people have asked for it, so I don't know. Hopefully you can see this. This is the protocol poster. I need to close PowerPoint. Sorry. Okay. How do I get out? Here we go. So let's close this. And then, can you see it now?
Technical difficulties.
All right, all those problems. So maybe we'll show it later. How about that? All right, so that covers it. And we'll show you the poster after the break.
OK, let's see our time. We have a small demo we're going to be giving on the voice side of things. We're going to take a small 10-minute break, come back in maybe a 10, 15-minute. That'll give us time for a meal break right afterwards, keep us on track. So we'll see you back in just a few minutes. So don't go away. Thanks so much.
Thank you.